Welcome to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Scott Greenberg. Have you ever tried to truly wrap your head around how big the universe is? Not just nodding along with the word billions, but actually feeling it. Today's guest has spent more than four decades helping people do exactly that. Dr. Jeffrey Bennett is an astrophysicist, educator, and one of science's most gifted communicators. He holds a BA in biophysics from UC San Diego and a PhD in astrophysics from the University of Colorado. And he's the kind of scientist who doesn't just study the cosmos. He finds ways to bring it literally down to Earth.
He's the lead author of college textbooks in astronomy and all kinds of other topics that together have sold more than 3 million copies. His children's books have all been selected for the Storytime from Space program, where astronauts aboard the International Space Station read them aloud to kids back in Earth. His newest book is called The Scale of the Universe. It gives us a guide to the answers modern science offers about just how vast space and time really are. Dr. Jeffrey Bennett, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thanks so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Well, before we get into the scale of the universe, I just have to hear the story of how your books have been selected for Storytime from Space. Is this on like NASA TV where the astronauts read the books aloud to kids back on Earth?
Well, the videos are actually all posted at storytimefromspace.com via YouTube. So you can just go to storytimefromspace.com and watch those videos, all seven of my kids' books. A couple of them, one in Spanish, one in Japanese also. And there's a couple dozen other books by other authors as well. And the story is kind of crazy. Astronaut Alvin Drew and Patricia Tribe, who was at the time the director of Space Center Houston, came up with the idea for Storytime from Space. And they were apparently familiar with my books, particularly Max Goes to the Moon, decided that was what they wanted to read from space, and gave me a call. And it took them probably about 5-10 minutes to convince me it wasn't a prank call. And then they got the program started. So Alvin read from the Space Shuttle Discovery in 2011. That was the first reading. And then they started taking the books up to the space station physically. Alvin read from a PDF on that first reading, and all the rest have been taking the books actually up to the space station with the astronauts reading them and the videos getting posted.
What a wonderful resource. Astrophysicists pursue a variety of different paths in their careers. No doubt you have as well, but you are just fascinated with the quest to get humans here on Earth to understand the scale of the universe. It's a human question, really, why you want people to understand. Can you help us along with that?
Well, I think it's kind of inherently human to wonder, what is our place in this world, in this universe? And that's what astronomy does, is it gives us the scientific answers to those questions. It's exactly the same interest that you have on the theological side, right? Wanting to understand how we fit in. And this is science's way of coming at it, to understand what the universe really is, how big it is, how old it is. And today we actually have answers to these questions that people have wondered about ever since people started walking this earth and thinking about things. And I wanted to try to share those with the public.
It's interesting because I sometimes actually stop and think, how am I on this rock? I'm on a rock on a spiral arm of a galaxy that's just hurtling through space, and it's supposedly infinite, and that infinite space is even expanding, so it's getting even bigger. What does the scale of the universe actually mean, and why did you feel it needed its own book? I mean, I'm thrilled that you wrote this book because I am trying to grasp, get my head around it myself. I mean, it's really mind-boggling if you think about it. I mean, we really are just on this tiny little rock hurtling through space.
It's mind-boggling even after you've been studying it for decades like I have been. And I think that's why it's important for people to understand it, because only once you understand what the universe is can you really start to think about how do we fit into it. And I think one of the things I want to emphasize in the beginning is, you know, a natural tendency is to go, wow, we're really tiny, so we must not be very important. But I like to counter that with the idea that we may be really tiny, but we figured this out. And that tells us that we're a very important part of the universe because we are self-awareness for the universe. The universe knows it exists because we're part of the universe and we know it exists. If we weren't here, maybe there's other alien species in other places that know this, but perhaps the universe wouldn't even know of its own existence without us.
Okay, so then that begs the question that we get a lot on Cool Science Radio about extraterrestrial life. If it is so vast and it is so, again, expansive, what do you think? I mean, are there other species or is there extraterrestrial life that they're sitting on some rock somewhere further out in space going, yeah, this, yeah, we're self-aware too.
When you look at the numbers, and I talk about this quite a bit in the book, when you start to look at the scale and the numbers and things, it seems almost inevitable that there must be lots of other civilizations with this kind of awareness out there. But perhaps the key word there is almost in the inevitable, because we don't yet know whether that's the case. We don't have actual evidence for the existence of other civilizations. It just seems like they should be there. And of course, we don't really expect to have that evidence yet because our technology has not quite reached the point where we would know if they were out there unless they came over and said hello.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Dr. Jeffrey Bennett. He is the author of a new book called The Scale of the Universe. So a moment or two ago, Jeff, you said that while we are a very tiny element here in the universe, we are important because we have figured a lot out about the universe. However, and you really stress this, we are not the center of the universe. You kind of equate this or maybe name this as a contributor in, you know, with a lot of issues that we have going on our planet, thinking that we are the center of the universe. You have something called CODIS, Center of the Universe Syndrome. I love it. What is that? And what's wrong with that?
Well, Center of the Universe Syndrome is thinking that you are somehow more central to the universe than others. It's kind of a natural tendency. In fact, for most of human history, we thought that Earth was the center of the universe, which would have automatically made us central to the universe. And if you think about it, when a baby is born, they don't know about the rest of the universe, so they would naturally think that they're central to things. Most of us, as we grow up, we learn that we're not more central than other people around us. And then if you study astronomy and learn about scale, you learn that our planet and our species is not more central than other places. And I think that's a very important thing for every human being to learn, because if you don't learn it, if you think that you're somehow more central and more important than other people, then you're likely not to treat other people very well. So I would argue that this center of the universe syndrome is the people who have it are the ones who cause all the problems in the world. Mm-hmm. And if you learn to overcome it, then you'll realize none of us are more important than anyone else. And then you're going to treat your fellow humans with more kindness, empathy, and respect.
Really great point. It's funny because I have often pondered why we will walk along at night and not gaze up into the night sky, that we almost ignore it sometimes. And it takes a lot for us to engage in the night sky and, you know, looking through a telescope or wanting to go to an astronomy festival or something like that. And I have often thought it's because we're kind of intimidated by the scale of the universe. I've never thought about it in the terms that you're talking about, that maybe it makes us realize that we are not so important here. What do you think it really is? You think it's this multifaceted story about why we don't engage?
Well, I think a big part of the reason we don't engage is because we've cut ourselves off from it. I think if you went back a couple hundred years and any time before that and offered these same things to people, they would be very, very engaged in the night sky because it was always a part of our lives until we had electric lights and TVs and other things to keep us entertained during the night. It used to be that you would pay attention to the sky all the time. And we've kind of lost that connection. I worry that we might lose it more as we start to hear about people putting up mirrors in space to reflect light at night and so on. But hopefully people are still interested in these questions, and hopefully people will go out and want to look up at the sky and then contemplate all these kinds of ideas that I talk about in The Scale of the Universe and other things in astronomy.
Could it also be maybe just the words that we use, the glossary that we have in our sort of vocabulary? I mean, we talk about terms like light years and billions of galaxies, and we just kind of have a tendency to gloss over those. But I noticed that you're trying to help readers kind of feel the size of the universe rather than just intellectually accept it. How are you doing that? How are you accomplishing that?
Well, there's a lot of different techniques you can use to try to make sense of these words. And as you know, they're easy words to say, but they're difficult words to actually understand what they mean. And so depending on what level of the scale we're at, I'll use different techniques. So for example, we often will say there's 100 billion stars in our galaxy, which is the rough number that you can use to think about it. But it's easy to say 100 billion. What does it mean? So in that case, one of the examples I like to use is, how long would it take you to count to 100 billion if you were counting out loud? And it's easy to start thinking about that. If you counted at a rate of 1 per second, 1, 2, 3, it would take you 100 billion seconds. And if you get out your calculator and figure out what's 100 billion seconds, divide by 60 to get minutes, divide by 60 again for hours, divide by 24 for days, divide by 365 for years, you'll find that 100 billion seconds is more than 3,000 years. So when you go, oh, 100 billion stars in your galaxy, that's easy to say. When you go, wait, it would take me more than 3,000 years just to count them, then you start to get a sense of what it really means.
So I should start now.
You should start now, yes. Don't take any breaks.
So after 4 decades of doing this and your ability to communicate these mind-blowing numbers, even after all the years you've spent in astrophysics, is there something that you still find mind-blowing?
Well, I find it all mind-blowing still. I mean, even though I can, you know, give you all these ways of putting things in perspective and I understand them myself, that doesn't make them any less mind-boggling. And so, yes, every time I go out and look at the night sky, which is the great thing to do because it's the best way to think about these things, right? When you go out there and you look up at the stars, then you're naturally going to think about all these things you've learned about, and it's going to boggle your mind, and it's going to make you think more about what you want to do as a human being, hopefully to help the rest of the world not only understand these things, but get along with each other and make the world a better place for all of us.
That's right. Well, I know you're coming to Salt Lake City in January for the American Astronomical Society National Conference, which is wonderful. I really wish you were coming in June to go to the Bryce Astronomy Festival. Have you by chance ever been to Bryce Canyon for their astronomy festival?
I've not been for the Astronomy Festival. I've been to Bryce Canyon.
Well, so no doubt you've been a stargazer in Bryce Canyon, which is important. And I think it's such a resource here in Utah to attend that festival. It's really amazing. And when you look into their telescopes, oh, when you start to see these nebulas and clusters, and I'm losing the lexicon here.
All kinds of things, star clusters, galaxies.
Yeah, that you can only begin to see little, what with the naked eye when you look up in the night sky, if it's really clear, you can see these little things that look like clouds. And once you look through a telescope, you see this just beyond, beyond, beyond. And it is absolutely fascinating. Do you find with maybe children or adults, when you turn them on to this stuff and they really grasp it and they really grasp what a billion is, do they stay interested? Is it like the light goes on and then they're always interested?
Yes. I mean, I think one of the great things about this topic is people are interested in it before you even start, and especially kids. And once you start to explain it, it only ignites more interest. And I think the more you learn, the more you're going to want to know. And I'll just mention with that telescope, I think a good example of that is if you look at the Andromeda Galaxy, you can find photos online of the Andromeda Galaxy that are going to look much more spectacular than what you're going to see for yourself through the telescope. But when you look through the telescope, that light is the actual light coming from that galaxy that's taken 2.5 million years to get from that galaxy to your eye. And you think about this photon of light that's journeyed 2.5 million years through space and then ends its journey on your retina so that you can see it through this telescope. It just makes it a much more incredible experience.
Yes. Well, you're really into scale and perspective. And you talk in your book about the Voyage Scale Model solar system. There's one on the National Mall in Washington. And around the country, there are some. I have never experienced one of these. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah. So this is a 1 to 10 billion scale model of the solar system. It's built, you know, so it's outside physically. And so on that scale, the sun is about the size of a large grapefruit. Earth is smaller than the ballpoint in a pen and located about 16 yards from the sun. So you can kind of picture that in your head. One of the amazing things about this model is the moon on this scale is only about 1.5 inches away. So you can think of the moon's orbit going around the Earth in the palm of your hand, and you realize that that's the farthest a human being has ever gone. And by the way, no one's gone there for more than 50 years until this week's Artemis mission will hopefully go and take people back around the moon. And then you can walk out to the rest of the planets over a span of about 0.5 miles. And then you would have to travel the distance across the United States to reach the next star system. So it really gives you this sense of how vast space really is. So the scale model solar system, the Voyage Scale Model solar system, shows you the planets. So it spread out over about 0.5 miles from the sun out to Pluto, which we include as a dwarf planet out there. And there's a couple dozen of them across the country. We built the first one was in Boulder when I was a graduate student. We put that up, and then the one on the National Mall. And we are still spreading them around. Maybe we'll get one to Salt Lake City one of these days.
That'd be awesome. I've seen the one, by the way, in Washington, D.C. Are you familiar with the Einstein Memorial?
Yes.
By chance, where he's gazing down.
Yep.
Upon, right?
Yep.
Kind of cool. For anybody very visiting cool. Washington, D.C., I highly recommend checking out Jeff's model, as well as stop by and visit the Einstein Memorial monument, where he's actually, the statue is gazing back down on the floor of the, I believe it's of the galaxy of the day he was born, if I've got that rumor correct.
I don't remember what he's gazing at specifically, but it's right out in front of the National Academies of Science building, I believe.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's very cool. I believe it's the alignment of the planets of the day that he was born. It's very, very clever.
And the Voyage Scale Model is right in front of the National Air and Space Museum, but it is currently removed for construction and will be back next year.
Good, yes. And it's great. And really, again, I encourage you. And if you can't get there, obviously get to Boulder, right?
Right.
So science feels more important to me, at least. And I guess it's because Lynn and I do this show, Cool Science Radio, but science literacy feels more important now than ever before. What do you think, or where do you think we're falling short, and what gives you hope right now?
Well, we're certainly falling short in the science literacy area in a lot of ways, and this traces to the difficulty of how it's being taught. We have the same problems with a lot of subject areas, in fact, but I think science in particular, because it can become very abstract, it's difficult to help people stay engaged with it as they move through school. And one of the great things I think about astronomy is it can help with that, because even though in some ways it's the most abstract with these incredible scales, it's also something that you can put into perspective and that is going to mean something to everyone. So I'd like to see us do more with astronomy as a tool for engagement with other sciences, with math, and with other subjects as well. And I think it's very important because, as you say, we live in a very scientific society. If you want to understand any of the major problems we have with the environment, with computers, with AI, you have to be able to understand the basic scientific concepts that underlie them.
Well, then how does understanding cosmic scale change how you think we deal with those issues on Earth? For example, climate change or biodiversity loss.
Well, I think when you understand the cosmic scale, you get that sense of how tiny this little world is, the fact that we're responsible for it, living here and understanding how small it is and how fragile it is. And it makes it more obvious that we better take good care of it if we want it to keep sustaining the kind of level of civilization and prosperity that we want to have.
Wow. Okay, Jeff, I've got this little metaphor, something that strikes me every time it occurs. You're going along on the highway, you hear an ambulance behind you or a police car, you know, something with sirens. Everyone pulls over. There's no one who does not pull over. It's the one time that we're not divided on something, that we're all doing something, not the good for the good of ourselves, but for the good of someone else. And I'm just wondering if you can take that into some aspect of what you are trying for, because it's the one time where it's so silly, but I feel like, oh, there is still good in humanity. It's a reach, you know, but.
Yes. And I think, you know, the fact that everyone is interested in this is one of the things that gives me hope, because if you didn't care about other people, you wouldn't care about who we are and what our place in the universe is. And as we talked about earlier, there are those people who suffer from the center of the universe syndrome who probably don't care very much. But for most people, this will engage them. And I think, again, once they start to think about it and realize, gosh, I can't be any more special than anyone else because look at how big the universe is compared to us. We better all figure out how to get along with each other. And I think for most people, it will help them do that.
Yeah. Time is also very difficult. Scott mentioned earlier, you know, the notion of a light year. This scale of time is big and we don't understand it. You took something, the cosmic calendar, which Carl Sagan first came up with, and you kind of forwarded that. Tell us about it.
Well, the cosmic calendar is Carl Sagan's way of describing the scale of time, where you compress the history of the universe into a single year, so that January 1st is the strike of is the moment of the Big Bang at the strike of midnight, and December 31st at the stroke of midnight is now. So basically, in a 14 billion year old universe, each month represents a little over a billion years. So I'm using Carl Sagan's tool, updated with the time scales that we now have that we didn't know fully at the time that he developed the tool. We didn't know exactly how old the universe was when he developed it. Now we have it pinned down to within a few percent. And when you put time on that scale, you can start to get a sense. For example, the Earth was formed in September on this scale. So you got 2/3 of the way through the year before the Earth even begins to exist. The dinosaurs on this scale and mammals evolved on Christmas Day. And on this scale, the dinosaurs went extinct yesterday. And the earliest humans didn't start walking on our planet until just a couple hours before midnight here. So you really start to get a sense of how the scale of time makes us seem, just like the scale model solar system and the counting to 100 billion stars can do for the scale of space.
Such a wonderful thing to think about. The book is The Scale of the Universe, and our guest has been Jeffrey Bennett, astrophysicist, among many other things, educator, and a person who incites us to love science. Your publisher is called Big Kid Science. Is that your own publishing company?
Big Kid Science is my own, yes.
Okay, great. And just in terms of your audience, I think you're going to say it's for every age. Is that right?
Yes, just about every age. I'd say starting probably around third or fourth grade on up to understand these scale concepts.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Are you still in Boulder, Jeff?
I am still in Boulder, yes.
Well, you will be having Sundance Film Festival in your wonderful town. And what a time to grab a lot of interested, creative, and intelligent people. So you'll have fun with that.
We're hoping to. It should be a great time.
We sure loved it for those 40 years. All right, Jeff, thanks so much. Been great having you.
Thank you so much.